Blog Talk Radio.
Providing the best quality products that your animals deserve and at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is taking a few days of very well-deserved vacation. He may pop in and out over the next couple days, but he'll be back with us full-time on Monday, August 15th. My name is Pat Forman. I'm your host today and an avid poultry advocate and sustainable agricultural writer. I've written several books, including City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, Day Range Poultry, and Backyard Market Gardening. And our special guest co-host today is Jesse Paul of Bid Bird. That's Bid Bird. So this will definitely be an exciting, extraordinary, ecstatic, and a power to the poultry sustainable lifestyle show. Today is Thursday, August 4th, 2011, and we would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon to Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio talk show that is broadcast around the world. It is all about keeping backyard poultry, show's poultry, gardening, urban farming, emergency preparedness, and living a self-sufficient and healthy lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. And from there, you can download the show to iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, and even sign up for the monthly newsletter, The Chicken Scratch. And you can also get all kinds of really cool chicken gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, we invite you to join us in the chat room that is going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country and even around the world. You can also ask any questions of our special guests when we have them on. And today, our special guest is Dr. Bridget McCrae. We will be talking about poultry clubs. So any questions you have about poultry clubs, this is the day to ask them. Now, to join this live chat room, it's really easy. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, click register. You can make your own fun and unique screen name and start chatting along with the chat room chickeners immediately. It is that easy. And I tell you, I've made so many friends through the chat room. We would also like invite you to mark this show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, we thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Chicken with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro.
Everyone has heard of ManaPro, but not everyone knows that ManaPro is a company that makes the care and nutrition of your animals the absolute highest priority. The animals in our lives are a lot of things. Pets, friends, providers, gardeners, and entertainment. So we want to take care of them with the same dedication with which they take care of us. That's why ManaPro is 100% committed to one thing above all else, nurturing life. Visit ManaPro.com for more information.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Looking for something? Find it online at BidBird Auctions. BidBird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made BidBird Auctions their new home. And get sold on BidBird.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
No, it's not Super Chicken. It is just Pat and Jesse coming at with today's show. Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. It is now time, it is finally time, to bring on our special guest host today, Jesse Paul of BidBird. Whoa, Jesse, I finally got that drum roll in. Welcome, Jesse.
Beautiful. I appreciate that. That's so much better than what Andy welcomes me with. I appreciate the drum roll. How are you, Pat?
Well, you know, Andy has to always have a tongue-in-cheek comment of some sort or another. That's part of the charm, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing when, like, little Caleb has a blowout. You know, we all find that so charming. But
yeah, you know,
this is funny.
Andy is just, I mean, once you meet him, he's just it's one of those people that leave a lasting impression. He's such a wonderful guy to be around. And I was reading his Facebook page, and I think if you follow the show regularly, you know that, I guess, it was an irresponsible dog owner. And it's not the dog's fault. Andy will tell you, dogs do what dogs do. But irresponsible dog owner let a couple of his dogs out, and he had to put his other goat down. The dogs got out, got into Andy's yard, I guess killed one goat outright, and the other one was put down. Did you hear about that yet, Pat?
I hadn't heard that the other one had to be put down.
Yeah.
I so sorry about that. Sometimes that's the best thing to do, though. I've had goats wounded that I just don't want them to suffer. But that's a heartbreak. That's such a heartbreak.
It is. It is. And I know Andy's going to, you're going to hear when he comes back on, he's going to obviously talk about it. But, yeah, on his Facebook page, it says, vet just called. Dixie's injuries are serious, and she needs to be put down. Two bottle-fed goats are now dead. Has been irresponsible piece of trash dog owner that I will find. Andy, give me a call. I'll help you find them. Anyways, you know, he named his goat Dixie, so yes, it's going to be irritating and hurtful, to say the least.
Oh, well, so at least maybe they're not there to actually see it. Sometimes it's a little better to have some distance. But, those were going to be their milk goats. I mean, that was part of their homestead plan, so That's quite a loss, but maybe some other goats will come along and have a great home, too. I got to tell you, it cracked me up, though. I was reading Andy's Facebook page today. Let's just bring him online, even though he's not here a little bit. He said, this is a slap-my-knee-silly thing, they snapped my census form back again with 4 exclamation points. In response to the question, do you have any dependents? I replied, 12 million illegal immigrants, 3 million crackheads, 42 million unemployed people, 2 million in over 243 prisons, and 535 idiots in the U.S. House and Senate. Apparently, that was not an acceptable answer.
Oh, God. I love Andy.
You got to. Yeah, you just got to. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, what's new in your life today here, Jesse?
Oh, just trying to get on with things out here. You know, we're kind of getting things in order in case we get called away next week. We also do some storm remediation or storm cleanup work. So, you know, it doesn't look like tropical storm Emily is going to do too much damage. But in our personal life here, we're kind of getting ready for that, trying to get the birds kind of the pens and everything else so just situated so that we can go away for a length of time if we need to. So aside from that.
Now, where are you going? You're headed off on some vacation, I assume?
No. If that storm comes through, we do storm cleanup as well.
Yeah.
So
nice.
We have to up there, get called away and do some of that work. But it doesn't look like it's going to be too big, but nonetheless, we have to be ready anyway, so.
Yeah, you know, that's really nice of you to help us clean up. And my gosh, I can't imagine. I think that's one of the reasons I really like the valley of Virginia and the mountains. There are two very solid mountain ranges between me and the ocean from both the east and the west. So we get storms, but nothing like hurricanes or that sort of thing. There was an interesting comment in the chat room. This thing about Andy having his goats killed by a neighbor's stray dog. Walter had posted that where did I read this? A judge decided not to put down a husky that killed chickens in Connecticut. And, you know, we've talked about this so much. We even had a help dogs stop killing chickens expert on the show. We've got to get as a national something that awareness that we need to treat our dogs. They're not going around attacking children, for example. Very few dogs are really attacking even adults, and we can treat them not to attack chickens. I just really believe that in my heart and soul that's possible. So to put the dog down, I think, is just not fair, because it really, as Andy agrees, it's the trainer. It's the owner's responsibility to train the
dogs.
Well,
maybe we should put a couple of owners down. Yes, just put some owners down, and then it'll stop.
little poultry corporal punishment, huh?
Yeah, that was a joke. I'm not considering. No, it's not condoning that. It was a joke. But anyways, yeah. There needs to be some more accountability for the dog owners.
Well, what I would suggest, Jesse, I think that there ought to be something that the owners have to do. And I would suggest that what they have to do is there needs to be developed a course for delinquent owners of dogs that they have to take. Just like if you have so many driving violations, you've got to go through this course that tells you how to work and train your dog so that it's a acceptable, I guess, to our culture, and it doesn't chase chickens. I mean, maybe that's something that we ought to work with, ought to grant with, to get that kind of a training program and then make it available to police officers or dog trainers across the country. What do you think of that?
I'm all in favor for that. I a lot of times I just don't think that people realize when they're letting their dogs loose that they are going to do what dogs do. And I guess they just don't think of, you know, the neighbor's poultry, you're going to get destroyed, whatever. I mean, I just think they just let them out and just let them roam a little bit. They figure it's good for the dog. I just don't think they realize what kind of trouble that they can get into. So, yeah, there just needs to be more accountability.
Yeah, one or more. Yeah, accountability is right. Darn. It says, Dragonfly in the chat room says, I know that my dogs really don't like other dogs. So she doesn't walk them where they're going to be other dogs. She has a male that apparently doesn't like the other ones. Oh, dear. Anyway, well, I have an interesting thing going on here. Is I've got, you know, I'm working on this next book, The Way of the Hen. It's using hens to incubate eggs and brood chicks naturally. And so I've got this one little Chanticleer partridge hen. She's the sweetest little thing. She's been sitting on the eggs, and they're due to hatch out not too far in the future. So I went to check on her this morning and to give her some feed. I found that if I keep feed right there by her, so she doesn't have to get off the nest to eat or to drink, that she'll eat and drink. So that takes some of the stress off of her. She's free to take a break anytime she wants. But I went there and found that there was another hen snuggled up right next to her to co-incubating these eggs. And I've seen that before with chickens, but not usually. It's on a huge nest of eggs where there's like 20 or so. This one I've only got about three false eggs under there. So why not share the duty of incubating if you're a hen? It's sort of like the hens that lay together stay together kind of thing. So
I've never heard that before. Yeah.
Well, what I'm going to do, you know, I asked the universe. I said, okay, just give me all these weird situations so I can get experience with them and write about them. So I think what I'm going to do is let the both of them hatch out the chickens. I mean, just see then how they, if they co-parent the chickens, or if some take five, you take five, I'll take three, you know, just how that's going to work out. Because there must be situations like this in the wild, and I would guess that this is not a unique situation. So that'll be unfolding. And maybe she'll just jump off the nest figuring there's really only room for one, and I really don't like her that much anyway, so I'm leaving this nest. Who knows which one will leave? It's like a real life story going on here with these hens.
I've got some chickens in the news when you're ready.
Yeah, that sounds good. Chickens in the News is brought to us by Meyer Hatchery. I believe that's what it is. Meyer Hatchery. So let me just play their commercial here. So we'll be right back for Chickens in the News.
Since 1985, Meyer Hatchery in Polk, Ohio has been a family-owned and operated business. Meyer Hatchery is a year-round hatchery that offers over 160 breeds of poultry, including chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, guineas, peafowl, and game birds, plus a full line of feed and supplies. Just need a few baby chicks? No problem. Meyer Hatchery will ship as few as 3 baby chicks. Check them out online at MeyerHatchery.com. That's MeyerHatchery.com.
Okay, Jesse, go ahead. What do you have for Chickens in the News?
So Chickens in the News brought to you by Meyer Hatchery. And if you do call Meyer Hatchery for an order, please make sure that you tell them that you heard the ad here on the Chicken Whisperer radio show. Call Jesse over there. She's wonderful. They are just – listen, that's, the customer service and the people over there are just incredible. So, yes, Meyer Hatchery is just an awesome place. So Chickens in the News brought to you by Meyer Hatchery. Pat, this one comes to us from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, so Atlanta News. The feathers were flying on I-285 early Thursday when a truck collided with a poultry truck, knocking live chickens into the interstate. The wreck happened on I-285 between I-20 and Donald Lee Hollowell Parkway around 4:30 a.m., just after a heavy rainstorm. Keith Turner was driving one of the trucks, pulling tandem trailers loaded with household products. When it started raining, the water set up on the road, and his truck just hydroplaned, and I lost it, Turner told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Turner's rear trailer overturned, hitting the chicken truck and knocking about 100 of the 4,000 chickens off the truck onto I-285. All the northbound lanes of the interstate were shut down for about 45 minutes while authorities and the chicken truck driver, Dennis McCoy, rounded up the loose chickens, which were on their way to a processing plant in Marietta, Atlanta. I've got the Pat Foreman stutters going today. Atlanta Fire Battalion Chief Byron Tate tells his crews initially they thought they'd be dealing with a hazmat incident, but weed killer being hauled by the first truck turned out not to pose a danger. The only human injury reported was a sprained ankle suffered by Turner. There was no immediate word on whether any of the chickens crossed the road. There you go. So, could you imagine that? chasing chickens all over the highway.
I don't want to imagine that. That's not something I want to have a visual of, Jesse.
What, of 100 chickens running all over the highway?
I wonder if some of them found homes. Maybe some were just adopted and had the hand of God saved them on the way to the processing.
Yeah, plant. They're hiding in the bushes. Yes. So, yeah.
Wow.
So it was the busiest morning in Atlanta.
Well, it's even busier in Atlanta. Did you hear about this massive recall?
No, on what?
Massive recall. Cargill recalls ground turkey over salmonella fears.
Oh,
this is amazing. And I've got two that are kind of linked together that I'm going to go over here. This is by Ryan Jaslow, and it's from CBS. Cargill executives are talking turkey after the meat producer recalled, you ready for this, Jesse? 36
yep.
million pounds of ground turkey over a salmonella outbreak that has sickened 76 people and it has killed one. And this is from Stephen Willardson. He's the president of Cargill's turkey processing business, said it's really regrettable that people have become ill from eating one of our ground turkey products. And for anyone who did, we are truly, truly sorry. So this is a Minnesota-based meat giant. It announced Wednesday, just yesterday, that would recall the fresh and frozen ground turkey products that was produced at the Springdale, Arkansas plant. And what do you think the dates are for this? I mean, this is amazing. It's from February 20th. From February 20th,
oh my goodness,
back February through August 2nd. So that's a long recall, and that's interesting that they would think that meat from it's frozen. Of course, it'll still be around. So the frozen ones. Experts say it is one of the largest meat calls ever, and despite the voluntary recall, the USDA and the CDC are still working to identify the source. They still don't know where it's coming from. Whoa. It says illnesses have occurred every month since early March, with spikes in May and early July, although some cases have not been reported yet. They just haven't made it to the CDC. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control down in Atlanta, said the strain is resistant to many commonly prescribed antibiotics, and that makes treatment so much more resistant. I'm going to repeat that. The strain is resistant to many commonly prescribed antibiotics used for people, which makes the treatment that more difficult.
Did you say it was resistant to antibiotics?
Yes. The strain is resistant to many commonly used antibiotics for people.
Yes.
And I've got a little follow-up story about that. Yep. What?
No, go ahead. I just want to make sure that we got that.
Yeah, well, that's so important because, you know, this has been going on for so long. I mean, I can remember even back when I was in college that we were talking about bacterial resistance and the problems of using them with farm animals, the same ones that you use for people. The states reporting the highest number of sickened are Michigan and Ohio, and then Texas followed that with seven others. So it is all across the U.S., Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, Iowa, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, Mississippi, North Carolina, Nebraska, Nevada, New York, Oklahoma, Oregon, South Dakota, Tennessee, and Wisconsin have all had cases reported. So the recall affects more than 25 different types of ground turkey, and all the packages in question contain the code, and this is a quote, EST period P-936, and I'll post that in the chat room. EST period P as for poultry, I guess, -963. That's from Cargill. And the thing is, here's the tricky part. Jesse, the packages are labeled under many different brands, including many different brands, including some like Honeysuckle White and Shady Brook. So there's all that, all those different brands. But the thing is to look for that one code, ESTP-963. Any questions, you can call Cargill's customer relations toll-free number, and that is 888-812-1649, 888-812-1649. So now here's the don't panic part, please, everybody, don't panic. Even if you purchased contaminated ground turkey, it's still safe to eat if you cook it to at least 165 degrees. So just cook the dickens out of that ground turkey, you'll be fine. It's also important that the consumers wash your hands really well before in handling the meat. And, of course, that chicken, turkey, and other meat products should be properly refrigerated or frozen. And the leftovers, make sure and reheat them. to at least 165 degrees. And the most common symptoms to look out for salmonella are diarrhea, abdominal cramps, and fever within 8 to 72 hours of eating a contaminated product. It can be life-threatening to those who have a weakened immune system, if they've really got a weak immune system. So that's the salmonella strikes again.
Well, you know, Fiona in the chat room, she put down, it only took them 4 months to put that out, you know, the recall out, after 4 months of having the stuff out. It's a good point. You know, it took them that long, you know, so anyway.
Well, sometimes it takes, you know, people can get sick for so many different reasons. I had a little tour down at CDC for about a month, and the data is like getting a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle kind of dumped on you, and you got to sort out where the leads are from, because there are many things that can cause intestinal upset, you know, different kinds of food poisoning. So I can understand that there is a lead time to try to figure it out. Yeah.
You don't know.
So this follow-up.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, interrupting real quick, so I can follow along. What is the dickens? How do you cook that? I mean, what is getting the dickens out?
that's a Midwest term, obviously.
Can somebody define what is dickens? What is that? I got to fry the dickens out. What is that? Is that like the boogeyman or something? Yeah. But anyway,
I think we had cooties here on the show one time. We had to get rid of the cooties too.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good trivia question. We'll ask.
What are the dickens? Yes.
Cook the dickens out of it.
Because I was threatened that I'd have the dickens beat out of me. I could never find them, and I always, as a kid, like, I got to get rid of these dickens because my mama threatened she's going to beat them out of me. So I better get rid of them before she beats them out of me. Never did find out what the dickens were.
Yeah, I'll do a little research on that, see where that term originated. Some of these terms are so much fun. Yeah, cook the dickens out of it. Very good, Jesse, I like that. Yeah. Okay, well, this follow-on story is about superbugs, and it's interesting, it came the same day. It says, highly resistant salmonella, poultry, antibiotics, borders, all are at risk. And this is by Mary McKenna. And it says here, if you're a strain, Jesse, if you are right now a strain, you've had a pretty good week. You're just out there everywhere. But if you're human, not so much.
Uh-huh.
There are two stories that are occurring simultaneously that underline the rising danger of the drug-resistant organisms in our food supply, and how the porousness, that's an interesting word to use, but the porousness, meaning things just kind of flow through and fall through the cracks of the networks for detecting the dangerous bugs in time. So that's what Fiona was saying. I mean, 3 months is really a long time, or 4 months. So first, we touched on the story, but we're going to get a little more specific. So hang with us here. Just keep there. You have to remember two bugs. The Centers for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration, they're tracking the Salmonella Heidelberg. That's the one that they feel is the one that has killed that one person and sickened 77 others, and that's the one responsible for recalling 36 million pounds of ground turkey. But it says these cases are scattered across 26 states, and there are more are being reported all the time. Now, the strain, of course, as we mentioned, is resistant to many commonly prescribed antibiotics and may be traveling around on the ground turkey. So there's now a public health alert out, and we knew that. But they have not been able to pinpoint the outbreak to a single product, to a single processing plant, or even to a single company. That's a little different than Cargill has kind of stepped up, but they're so huge, so... So the CDC said that routine samples processed by the National Antimicrobial Resistance Monitoring System, the National There is such a thing, a National Antimicrobial Resistant Monitoring System that's shared by CDC, FDA, and the USDA, has retrospectively found the outbreak strain in four samples that were purchased from the beginning of March before the earliest case was even reported. So what they're doing is they're tracking this, but what's happening, meanwhile, things are getting worse. Oh, no. A multinational team of scientists, in a paper released today, I mean, we're talking today, the Journal of Infectious Diseases has identified a clone of a different stereotype of Salmonella. So while we've got the Heidelberg one coming up, there's apparently an even more virulent one that they're calling Salmonella Kentucky. And what they're finding is that this Salmonella Kentucky has become groups such as Cipro, and Cipro is what's usually used in people. Well, they've compared the data from different countries. This is going worldwide, Jesse. They've compared the data from different countries' surveillance systems, and they've discovered that it has been causing human illnesses since 2002. And it's causing it in Europe, in the Middle East, and in the U.S. And it appears to have originated in Egypt in the late 1990s. And guess what the problem is? It's chicken.
Pat, we are losing you a little bit, or actually quite a lot here.
Oh, dear.
You're kind of going in and out on us again.
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm not sure what I can do about that unless I call back in.
Well, why don't you go ahead and call back in, Pat, and I'm going to do a quick chickens in the news over here and see if that helps.
Why don't you do that? I'll see if I can get a better signal. I'll be right back.
Thank you. And while Pat calls back in, I've got a question for the chat room. What part of the turkey does turkey bacon come from? I've always wondered that. And by the way, Pat, I don't know if you're going to be able to hear this or not. Also, Dickens was a euphemism found that they used, beat the dickens out of him was to beat the devil out of him is what I read. But anyways, chickens in the news. Essex County goes clucking nuts for chickens. And this is brought to us from westorange.patch.com. 13 of 22 towns allow residents to raise chickens for eggs in their backyards. And soon that number may be 14. It's not just for Brooklynites on the pecking edge of local vore trends. Raising your own backyard chickens has come to Essex County, New Jersey, and in a big way. 13 of 22 towns, including West Orange, allow for raising chickens for eggs and personal consumption, not sale, on residential property, and that number will probably soon be 14. Montclair's Chicken Whisperer, not to be confused with our Andy Schneider, but Montclair's Chicken Whisperer, Grace Grund, recounted the thrills of chicken rearing to an enthusiastic throng in Maplewood last fall. And Reese Zellman followed up with a report to the Maplewood Township community in July stating that in recent years, many of us have started to realize that maintaining a close connection to our food is positive, not a negative, and is a part of living a more sustainable lifestyle. Farmers markets are experiencing revival. People are gardening more. Communities around the nation are changing decade-old laws forbidding keeping of chickens. Salmon is right about chickens being part of the new local vore, eating locally sourced and grown food movement, but for some, Essex County chickens are already part of the landscape. It goes on to tell different towns that are allowing them. This week, Maplewood moved closer to be the 14th Essex County town to host backyard chickens. When township committee members asked town council Roger Desiderio to draft an ordinance that would allow for 15 households to pilot a one-year program, the ordinance will be introduced on September 6th. Township committee members decided on a $25 fee, not sure what that's about, for the program, which is detailed here. The committee was also assured that the coops were not considered accessory structures and would not require a zoning variance. Also, the committee members added language to the proposal that would allow for residents to seek waivers from neighbors when their lots are not large enough to meet setback distances required for the coops. She then added that chickens are friendly, social, intelligent, affectionate, entertaining, low maintenance, small, quiet, and expensive to keep. Roosters, the ones who make the noise, are not necessarily for hens to lay, but will not be allowed in Maplewood, as is the case in most other towns. So there you have it. New Jersey is starting to allow more and more hens, but not roosters. I see, Pat, you're back.
Yeah, that's a good article, Jesse. I mean, we're of course seeing this across the world. We have international stories about villages that are getting more chickens to be self-sufficient, and here we are in New Jersey. I mean, it's a movement that I think with our concern about contaminated food supplies and big business monocultures, that it's here to stay. So we'll keep tracking it, but that's a good one. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, we can hear you really well. And you know, tying it in with your earlier chickens in the news, you know, when a mass-producing factory like the one who's producing the ground turkey, Pat, when they get salmonella, boy, it's shipped all over the country, and a lot of people get sick. I'm not saying backyard poultry, or if you consume your own poultry that you rear, I'm not saying it will be void of salmonella, but the outbreak will be very small and limited to, you know, perhaps your own residents.
Yeah, that's true. Listen, I just want to finish up there just a little bit more with this one about the highly resistant salmonella, the Kentucky, mm-hmm. salmonella Kentucky version that is making a comeback, or not comeback, excuse me, but coming on strong. They're saying because the Kentucky serotype of salmonella is unusual in humans, it's becoming more common. And it has been, of course, in poultry since the 1930s. So this is not a new strain of salmonella. It's been around since the 30s. It's just it's making a bacterial resistance comeback. And, of course, making the infections more unusual is how resistant this Salmonella Kentucky is, not only to the fluoroquinolones, which is the Cipro, but also to, this is the biggie thing, Jesse, also to amoxin, and amoxicillin, streptomycin, spectinomycin, gentamicin, sulfamethoxazole, that's your Bactrim and all those cheap and older sulfa drugs. And the tetracyclines. The only one they don't really put in here is the penicillin, but I bet it's almost the placebo drug of choice now with so much bacterial resistance. So what they're saying, though, that the chickens, it's jump species, not just from chickens, but also it has been found on spices. How about that?
Wow.
That have been imported
wow.
from North Africa. Right.
On spices.
So, on spices as well. So all they're saying is all these drugs that I mentioned above that have been given to animals in intensive farming, they are fundamentally identical to the drugs given to humans. We've been beefing about this for decades. The World Health Organization, among other bodies, has been issuing warnings for years that using these drugs in this manner would make them not useful for human infections. And so now this appearance of this highly resistant Kentucky strain has proven them right. So that puts the stakes, like you were saying, all the more higher for local foods and local food production and know your food sources. So that's pretty profound.
Yes. You went down a whole list of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Being you're a pharmacist by trade, right?
Yes, I am.
So I mean, that's pretty much all the antibiotics, it sounded like. You covered the sulfas and all the rest of them.
I know it. Exactly.
I mean, is there anything left?
Well, that's the big issue, and that's certainly where some of the Lyme's patients are. Although Lyme's is it's a little spirochete, but yes, what are we going to do when nature wins out? I mean, ultimately, I think nature will win because everything is always evolving and adapting. So bacterial resistance is look at the bacterial resistance MRSA that was such a problem.
Right.
So I guess the bottom line is keep your immune system in as good a shape as you can possibly keep your immune system, and cook your meats, your commercial meats, at least to 165 degrees, and wash your hands after handling them.
Yeah.
Jesse, that's sort of commercial. Go ahead.
Yeah, real quick, I mean, you wash your hands with everything, absolutely, even you know, your home-raised birds as well, but... just because you have home-raised poultry does not mean you're immune from salmonella. So, yes. proper preparation. But anyways, yeah, Pat, let's go to commercial.
Okay, and Fiona made a really interesting comment that is applicable here, too. She says, people don't, we don't really necessarily help them ourselves by being so overly sterile. I mean, it seems like we have such a germophobic society, and there is a one school of thought that, you know, when I was growing up, we ran around barefoot and played in the dirt and just that. And there is a school of thought that being too sterile causes an aborted immune system, so then you start to get allergies and asthma and some of these autoimmune diseases that fall back on the body. So there is a balance there somewhere. And Bitbird, it's true, Fiona did not say that you were sterile. She was only implying that if you wash your hands too much, that that might.
Well, what were you thinking I was saying, Pat? What are you implying?
I wasn't thinking. I think a few germs are a good thing, but let's after using raw meat, you might want to wash your hands before and after.
Yeah, I was just saying I didn't wash my hands. I wasn't saying that I was sterile. What are you getting at? You should have went to the commercial when you had the chance.
No, Jesse, I feel like you need to justify something here. Right? We know you're a very rich, broad and wide person.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to go to commercial break here. Thank you, and hold on for a bit, Bird.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bitbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Oh, variety. Welcome back to Chicken Whisperer and Backyard Poultry. Jesse, I just want to remind everyone this is live radio. That's why it's so much fun. You know, you can't take it back, but anyway. So cool. It is now time. It is now time to introduce our special guest, Dr. Bridget McRae. Dr. McRae is with the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources at Delaware State University. And let's see. Dr. McRae, are you with us?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you for calling in. How are you doing today?
I've got a cold.
Oh.
I hope it's not salmonella.
No, this is viral. Salmonella is bacterial. So I am home recuperating. Fantastic job with chickens in the news, Pat.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. This is something that has been on my bandwagon for decades, Dr. McRae. It has never made sense to me why we use human antibiotics in farm animals.
Well, one of the things that, I do sound a little stuffed up, but I'm going to muddle through this. One of the things that we found when I did my PhD research project, the two big salmonellas that we found were Heidelberg and Kentucky. So,
uh-huh.
I mean, they're out there, and the poultry industry knows it, and, you know, this ties in perfectly with the Heidelberg that was found in the recalled turkey meat.
Mm-hmm.
I know that people out there are nervous, but coming from somewhat of an industry point of view and somewhat of a microbiologist point of view, it takes so long to find some of these things because you said it perfectly. It's like a puzzle. If someone in Michigan gets sick and someone in Florida gets sick, by the time someone from public health gets to those people and asks them what they've eaten in the last 5 days, are these people going to can you tell me, Pat, what you had 5 days ago for breakfast or lunch and dinner?
I'm afraid my diet is so simple. Dr. McRae, I could, because I don't eat out
that much. But the majority of your listeners can't, right? The majority of the listeners
can't. I
can't
tell you what I did. I can tell you what I ate, but I can't tell you what I did.
There you have it. It's a problem because then you've got these hundreds of foods that people may have mishandled in their home, discarded already, that may or may not be the culprit, and then is the person in Florida and the person in Michigan, are those two health departments necessarily going to talk to each other right away? No.
Right. Yeah.
There is a system in place for that kind of collaboration, but it takes time, absolutely takes time. And then being a microbiologist, why are people eating undercooked and somewhat raw turkey?
Right.
That's my question. If man learned to cook food eons ago, why aren't people cooking their food well? Well, it could be that they cross-contaminated in the kitchen. They could have used mm-hmm. the same knife for chopping up the turkey that they did for the salad that they prepared later on. And, you know, that happens. Or they temperature abused it. Could be that they thawed the turkey out incorrectly. So these are all things that we try to teach our 4-H members in part of our programming, especially the chicken barbecue and the turkey barbecue contest, which I'll be starting up here in Delaware. But this is the exact reason why. And who's really getting hurt? Well, there's two groups. There's the farmers that are raising the turkeys that, you know, now their demand's going to go down because everybody's going to be afraid of turkey for a little bit. And then there's the consumer who's not going to eat turkey that they like so much because they're scared and nervous. They're like, oh, my gosh. You know, the media is very good at putting out the information about the recalls. But it's usually, watch this, usually at the very end of the broadcast, they're like, if you cook your turkey to 165, it's safe to eat. And then they move on to the next subject. It's not the emphasis. But the solution is out there to cook your turkey, and please don't cross-contaminate in your homes. What I think your listeners really need to be critical of is the information that they're receiving. Demand more of the media. Yes, this problem is from 4 months worth of product that's out there. Okay, why are we just hearing about it now? What was the critical point that brought this to Cargill's attention? All right, and then be very careful when you're listening to see where the source is. Is it being sourced from a contaminated piece of equipment? A contaminated feed source for the turkey, a contaminated farm that's been put through processing several times over the past several months? Is it, you know, this is the information you want and you deserve as listeners out there, because the media didn't really tell us about that contaminated feed until long time had passed during that DeCoster egg problem in Iowa
Right. Well, now there is another side to this story, though, Dr. McCray, and that is support your local farmer. Know where your food is coming from.
Well, salmonella is in all birds. It doesn't matter if it's a turkey or a chicken. The prevalence that you find it in commercial is the same as the prevalence in small flocks. So it's not so much support your local person, it's more of make sure you cook your meat well from whomsoever you get it from, even if you process your own birds at home. And always make
sure
that the person you buy from is using proper cleanliness techniques in their slaughter of the birds. And so these are all common sense things.
Yes, and they've been around for decades. I mean, people in pioneer days were dying from salmonella.
Exactly.
And food poisoning. So it's
exactly.
It's really nothing new. There's a question from the chat room, Dr. McCray, why don't we just start with that, because
unfortunately, Pat, I don't have the internet in front of me since I'm at home.
No problem. I'm gonna read it to you. It's a common problem, and I've even had it myself. Be interesting to see what you say. This is about a little baby chick. It was a little chick that was struggling to hatch out, and it even stopped breathing. So they helped it out, and they got it breathing again. Now it's a little weak, but they want to know if there's any advice or anything that you could give suggestions on about caring for it.
Well, just make sure it's eating and drinking, doesn't get picked on by anybody else in the flock. You may want to attempt to give it a little bit of electrolyte water, but I'm not necessarily the right one to be the proponent of helping chicks out, because I come from a very different camp. But once it's out, you know, it's going to be weak, and it may never perform optimally.
Exactly.
It may just never catch up, right?
It may be smaller. It may have nutrient deficiencies. It may have genetic problems. And you get the best chance you can.
The other thing is, you got to be careful is when you do help a bird out like that, and if you plan on breeding from that bird, they are quite likely to pass on that trait, or could possibly pass on that trait to their offspring. So
that's why I come from the camp of, if you don't hatch out, you weren't healthy to begin with. I'm not here to help you. You got to do it yourself.
Right. And, well, that's also providing, though, Doc, that the hatching conditions were optimal, and that whoever was running the incubator, if it was an incubator, that the humidity was right, temperature was right. But
regardless, if you hatched an unhealthy chick, if you're not creating the right hatching conditions, then you may be creating your own problems.
Right.
So unfortunately,
I know. That's heartbreaking when that happens.
You know, if it were a commercial bird, it would be out of there. But thankfully, it's not, and it becomes a time management issue for the owners. How much time are they willing to devote to the care of this animal?
Mm-hmm. And if they were to put it down humanely, what would you suggest? What method?
Oh, well, goodness, that's a tough one. If it's really small and, like, just hatched out, sometimes you can just very quickly snip the head off with a good pair of scissors, and that's quick. Other times, some people have access to carbon dioxide, and that is something you can put in, you know, you have to treat that gas with a great deal of care. You can put them down, and that's a much more better way of putting the birds down. But a lot of people don't carry around tanks of CO2, but sometimes your vet has that, or sometimes your local diagnostic lab will definitely have that and can help you out there.
Okay. I know when we had our little small poultry ranch, I guess you'd say, and some would hatch out, you knew they just weren't going to make it. We just do the quick neck dislocation method. It's just real fast, but I could never get used to doing that, I must say.
Right. The first time I learned to do that was with turkey poults, and I was surprised that you can get away with that technique if you have a good pair of scissors. Don't use the round-ended craft scissors that your kids are going to cut paper with. Use good scissors, and you can still do that when they're several hours old.
Yeah. Apparently this one just hatched out yesterday. This is coming to us from Kara. Kara, what I would do is if the chick looks like it's going to have any sort of promise at all, she said it just hatched out yesterday, so it does have it's survived 24 hours, which is kind of a benchmark, is I'd make some feed for it out of the yolks of eggs, hard-boiled eggs, and mix that in with some rice, just kind of put it in a blender to make a little mash, and just maybe a little bit of the chick meal in with it and see if you can't get it eating. Sometimes they'll really go after that egg yolk when they won't eat anything else, I've found. But that's a pretty, like you're saying, Dr. McCrae, that's a very high intensive, how much time and energy do you want to invest in a little chick? Yeah.
And knowing if you're using raw egg yolk, that's where salmonella could be.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you're using what? No, this would be a hard-boiled egg.
Oh, a hard-cooked egg. Okay.
Hard-boiled egg.
Then
hard-boiled
if it's hard-cooked, then you should be okay.
Although, I have to confess, I eat eggs from my flock raw. I'll put them in a smoothie or make a Caesar salad, but I wouldn't do it from anyone else's flock. I know, but I do. And
you've been watching Rocky
again,
haven't you?
Yes, that's right. That's right. So I'm an egg rebel from my flock only.
Oh, good night.
Okay.
That does not sound appealing to me.
Yeah. If I get sick, I know I won't get any sympathy, and that's probably well deserved.
No.
But so far, after several decades, I haven't. So, Professor McCrae, do you feel good enough to go on to talk about poultry clubs today, or
What's going on in your chat room? Do people still want to talk about the egg recall? And I do have one more poultry in the news to add to your list, if you don't mind. But what's going on in the chat room?
Well, they're talking about the most humane way for chickens is sometimes just a quick neck snap, you were saying. So they're still talking about this little chick.
If it's just out of the egg, you know, if it's less than 24 hours, if you have a sharp edge of a coffee table or sharp edge of a, some other, piece of equipment in the garage, sometimes you can just push their necks up against that to cervically dislocate and put the bird down that way rather than pulling their heads off.
That's
although it certainly is easy to pull their heads off, but then you have to deal with blood, and some people don't like that.
You
know, a little tip, and you know, I hate doing this. I want to preface this by telling you I absolutely hate doing this, but when you hatch out hundreds of chicks every week or even more, like some of the hatcheries do, this is something that you have to deal with on a weekly basis. We use an old feed bag, put our hands about halfway down that feed bag, and we separate the head. We don't see anything. You use rubber gloves, like a paramedic-type glove, and away you go. It's not pleasant. It is quick. They don't even know what happens. So, but, yeah, so the blood and everything else, just use a feed bag, an empty feed bag. What do you think?
That's a good point.
Good point, yeah. Good idea.
But it never gets easier.
It is something that people have to think about, even if they have adult birds. And eventually I'll figure out a way to do a workshop on this to teach people how to cull birds. Because just like Andy experienced, he had a dog get in and do damage to his animals.
Yeah.
I've had dogs get in and do damage to my chickens, and I had to put them down. And thank goodness someone, when I was at UC Davis as a student, someone took the time to teach me how to cervically dislocate birds. And I learned a ton, and I found that so valuable. Like when my, you know, I'd go back and my 4-H-er had a bird that was dying, and she wanted it put down. She didn't, you know how, and so all I did was I came over and I just hit the neck, and she never, you know, she knew the animal didn't suffer.
Right.
So, and you know, it's a good skill to have so that when you know the quality of life of your animal is deteriorated beyond repair, you can make the decision to put them down.
Yes. And that's a tough decision. In fact, Dr. McCray, in the third edition of Chicken Edition, there is a very detailed, with pictures, way of doing the neck location method, especially, and we used a woman that's used to doing it, just so that, because if it's a big guy, it's one thing, but when you're small and have small hands like me, there's a for it. So that goes into very detailed in Chicken Tractor, the third edition. And it is something that people will have to do. If you have livestock, they're going to die. That's just eventually part of it. So.
And some breeds and certain age birds are tougher to put down than others, and people need to know that there is a difference. Like, say, if you have an old leghorn, they're hard to put down. You wouldn't think that they would be, but they are some of the hardest to put down. And then, of course, anytime you have a big male bird.
Yeah, oh boy. Then get a big male guy to do that.
Yeah,
I don't
sometimes
think
you're the only one home. Sometimes you're the only one home and you know what needs doing.
Yeah.
And that's actually what I learned on. And I never forgot that. It was a challenge, but I was trained really well. And so, you know, my confidence was boosted. But getting on to my poultry in the news, it's not necessarily good news, but it is breaking news. In your area, Pat, in Virginia, it looks like, unfortunately, there may be cause for concern for another Virginia Tech shooting today. And I tie this into poultry because Virginia Tech's bird is the Hokie bird.
That's right.
Yeah. Pat, tell people what a Hokie bird is.
they have them all over Blacksburg. There are these turkeys dressed in all kinds of different ways. So
a Hokie bird is a turkey.
I just
thought I'd share that with everyone. You know, if you have folks that you know of in the area, you know, send your prayers to them and hope that this really isn't another shooting incident. They really don't know what's going on, but you'll probably find out on the 5 o'clock
news. Wow, I'm so sorry to hear that one, Professor McCray. It says here Virginia Tech is in a lockdown as we speak.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
They don't need that
Lord.
Again. It was last, was it 2007 they had that happen?
Yes. It was in 2007, a mass shooting killed 33 people.
And one of those was a poultry science student, too.
Oh, I didn't know that. Gosh.
Yeah. So, you know, for those of you who who knows folks there, you know, give them your thoughts.
Yep, absolutely. And put them in our prayers. Absolutely. Ooh.
Okay, so do you want to talk about, I mean, I'm not sure how we're doing on time, but do you want to talk about the poultry club? Or do we have enough time?
We don't have trivia today, and there are a couple questions here in the chat room. We could just field questions, but if we want to talk about poultry club
network, let's field questions, because this is a hot topic right now, and I think it would be... I think it would be more appropriate to hit the hot topics in the news right now, which is the turkey meat and salmonella.
That is the hot topic. The chat room is kind of focusing. They're still talking about having to do euthanasia on birds. They're talking about using a broomstick to put down the larger birds. And that does work. I mean, you know, stepping on the head or putting a broomstick, you put it down, you put the bird down on the ground and the broomstick behind its neck, and then you stand on the broomstick and pull up on its legs. That's from Critter Lover. So
you need to do that very quickly, though.
Yes, very quickly.
And it needs to be done very quickly, because there is a small amount of suffering that is potentially there for that technique. Cervical dislocation is so quick that, you know, there's no crushing effect, like, say, of the broomstick, even for half a second.
Right. Yeah. Well, here's a question. It says, this is DePeasley, I guess, has a hen that is laying eggs without shells, and it's getting worse. So she's laying nude eggs. Kind of consistently, either that or with soft shells. What can she do about that?
Well, my first question is, you know, does she have the bird on a balanced diet, and is she, you know, feeding a laying ration, and is she giving them supplemental calcium via oyster shell?
Okay.
If her chickens are sick, the first disease that comes to mind for me might be infectious bronchitis, if she's heard, you know, the chickens, you know, coughing, rattling, sniffling, anything like that. But it could also be several other diseases.
They've been feeding layer feed with added calcium, free range, and they are free range birds. So she's got enough calcium, it looks like, in her diet.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, could be that she's starting to go into a molt. Definitely would ensure that there's plenty of shavings in the nest box so that she doesn't destroy these eggs and start egg eating. You know, as soon as the hen lays that egg, the potential for it to break and cause egg eating is certainly there. If she knows which hen is doing this, I'd separate her so that, the potential for egg eating is significantly removed. And then I would take a look at, you know, is there a chance that she ate something in her travels around your property that is affecting her shell-making process? You know, is she eating a significant amount of certain plant materials and foregoing the balanced diet? Is there scraps being given? This happens a lot, you know, for people who feed scraps from the kitchen or from food service of any kind, that sometimes the chickens will say, oh, if I hold out for the good stuff later on today, I don't have to eat the other stuff. And then, of course, that throws out their ability to make eggs. But then, of course, it's hot out there. Could be that the hen is trying to molt.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things that have to be evaluated when I hear these types of stories. And certainly this isn't the first person who's had this.
Yeah.
I had a client once whose chicken ate a whole bunch of mushrooms in the yard, which, of course, they started to have deformed eggs, and then chickens were lethargic, and a couple of chickens died, and a couple of chickens, you know, started putting out these shellless eggs, and then one of those died, and, you know, she was letting her chickens run around, and, you know, chickens don't always eat the smartest things.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't tell them, don't eat the mushrooms.
So you think that's what caused it? were some kind of a mushroom.
Well, that's what they figured out, what the chickens had been eating so much of. When they did a necropsy of the bird, they found mushroom parts in their, gizzard and crop.
Yeah.
And so they
Go ahead. She used to lay normal eggs, so this is a different pattern from what she was doing before. Large normal eggs, she said.
So definitely,
and there's another comment about
remove her first.
Yeah. Just get her in quarantine and then kind of watch her carefully.
Yeah,
especially that egg eating possibility. Oh my gosh, that can go through a flock like wildfire.
You know it.
Terrible. Yeah. Okay. There's another comment about the heat and that causing a decrease in egg laying. I've noticed that in my flock. It's just too hot to work. It's like they don't want to lay eggs in this heat.
Right. Part of the problem is the heat of the water that you're providing. So unfortunately, if you go to work in the middle of the day and you're not there to change out the water, then you know, it could be that the water temperature is getting so high that they won't drink. And you know, if they're not drinking, they're not going to lay eggs.
So
that's one of the things you need to evaluate. And this is the perfect time of year to go to one of the local box stores and pick up one of those minimum maximum thermometers and see how hot it actually is getting out there in the middle of the day, especially if you go off to work. Wherever these chickens are, you need to know how hot it's actually getting. And then, of course, the bigger water that you provide for your chickens, like say if you provide like an 8-gallon water or something like that, or 15-gallon water, that's a larger volume of water that the noonday heat has to heat up, and so the water will actually stay cooler longer. So if you can increase the size of your watering devices, then the chances that they'll get fresh, cool water for longer in the day certainly is there. The weekend before, we were having those 115-degree days here in Delaware, as well as the Delaware State Fair.
Whoa. Whoa, yeah. 115 degrees in Delaware. Oh, my gosh.
Well, it was so hot because of the humidity, and at fair they had to, you know, a pig died, it couldn't cool itself down. They had to send a horse home. Several chickens died because people were bringing them in their air conditioned cars, and then they take them out of the cars and put them into the poultry show building, which was not air conditioned, and they, you know, about I think 8 or so of them passed away, and then the rabbits. I will not tell you how many rabbits they lost. They started to go within half an hour, and then half an hour of each other, and they just couldn't get to them fast enough, you know, before they were in distress. So when you're talking about this heat, when you get beyond a certain level of humidity and a certain level of temperature, the chicken's body can no longer shed that heat. And whatever you can do to help them, you know, especially by giving them cool, clean water, it's going to help you keep that water in the shade. That's something else you can do. Some people have suggested putting in ice cubes during the hottest part of the day into the water. Chickens certainly will not swallow ice cubes, but they will, appreciate the cooler water.
Now, Doc McRae,
that should keep them in lay.
Doc McRae, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. When Peter Brown was on, and he brought up a good point about keeping birds cool, a lot of us, when we go out there maybe to check on the birds or check for eggs, whatever, and I notice it myself, we go out there, and all of a sudden they go from being relaxed, they start crowing, the males start crowing, obviously, and the hens start kind of hopping around. And that kind of gets them hot. I think Peter Brown's advice was kind of leave them alone on the hot days. And I mean, what do you think of that?
Whatever you can do to keep the bird's activity at a minimum is great. But if that means foregoing giving them fresh, clean, cool water,
Right.
That doesn't preclude that.
Right.
Yeah. If you have to go out and invest, you know, $30 in a bigger water, then go do it. And give your chickens a chance to cool themselves down in the hottest part of the day. If you're close enough at work to go out and change the water at noontime when you've got those over 100 degree days, great, do it. Your chickens will thank you because basically they don't have the choice that we have. They don't have skirts and tank tops that they can put on. They're wearing a feather coat all year round. So if you really want to know what your chickens are going through, go grab your down coat from winter and hang out with them for an hour. See if you can hack it.
Oh, my. That's very empathetic advice.
Yeah. If you can't hack it, then, you know, thank your chicken for making it through the day every day and do whatever you can to help them.
Right.
And then, of
Good
course,
point.
If you can increase ventilation, that's fantastic. Some people will drag out a box fan to the coop and just put it on the birds. And
uh-huh.
albeit ventilation does help, not to the point where you're kicking up dust, though. So never angle your box fans or fans so that you're blowing off dust from the rafters or kicking up dust from the shavings. You want
right.
to angle it so that it's at least moving the air around in the room. But then if you are kicking up dust from the rafters, then you know it's time to clean up anyhow. So
just
use
true.
A little common sense
true.
There.
That's true, yeah. And don't breathe it yourself. It's dusty.
But, yeah, if you can take an extension cord, you know, take it out there, and get those birds cool. They deserve it. I mean, you're asking your chickens to join you in this adventure of life, and certainly you don't want to be the one that causes a detrimental end or a premature end for them. And I know most of your listeners completely understand that point of view. So hopefully you will, as good flock owners, you will join me in changing water often and keeping your birds cool.
Now, Dr.
Right,
Craig, some
right.
people talk about using misters, and we've talked about this before on the show. Correct me if I'm wrong. I would really use caution in a mister because if you make the litter wet, even just the damp, I think you're just inviting all sorts of parasitic type of problems.
Well, bacteria. You got to think of bacteria first. Bacteria and mold. We'll take advantage of that first. Yes, wet litter is bad. So if you're going to ventilate and use misters, then make sure you have ventilation to the point where that litter dries out very quickly. And it's a balancing act. Now you're playing around with a lot of the techniques that these commercial guys use to keep their birds alive. Because
that's right.
You can separate yourself by miles and techniques, but when you start, you know, managing your birds through the summer heat, you're going to end up using some of the same techniques, and you're going to have to understand ventilation and temperature control so that you're not causing the same problems in your birds that the big commercial guys are trained to avoid, for which you have not received training.
Right.
Listen, Dr. McRae and Jesse, let's take a short commercial break here.
Sure.
And then when we come back, we've got about 12 to 15 minutes left, and we can continue on with the ways to cope with the heat. And it looks like we'll save maybe poultry clubs for another time. But
that'll work. Thank you, Pat.
Yeah, sure. Our special guest today is Dr. Bridget McRae. She's with the Department of Agricultural and Natural Resources at Delaware State University, and we'll be right back. Hold on.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com. Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
All righty. Welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer, Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles Talk Show. Our special guest today is Dr. Bridget McCray. She's with the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources at Delaware State University and an expert in small flocks. So, Dr. McCray, you're live on the air. Jesse, you're live. We were talking about, misting and keeping chickens cool.
Jesse, thank you for bringing up that idea. It's a very good point, and depending upon interest, that certainly would be something to cover at, say, a summer workshop series or something that I do occasionally offer here in Delaware for local residents. But, you know, when you go to school to get your poultry science degree, that is one of the things that they do talk about. And a lot of these big poultry houses have ventilation systems that are pad and fan systems where they use trickling water over these pads, and they pull air through those pads. So at one end of the house, you have very cool air coming in, and it's being sucked through the house to the other end where there's fans that blow out that air. So you've got, you know, a mixing of cool air cooled by water moved through the house, and it mixes with the hotter air in the house, so it's not freezing cold. But it certainly, along with the movement of the air and the cool air coming through that pad and fan system, it certainly does work to keep those commercial houses cool in these tough summer heat days. Now, in certain parts of the country, things still haven't cooled down, although I think you and I, Pat, here on the East Coast are experiencing a little relief in the heat with these storms that have rolled through. But that doesn't mean that your flock is unworthy of the same kind of treatment. Hopefully that some of your listeners out there will consider some ingenuity or innovative idea for keeping your flocks cool in the summer. And unfortunately, a lot of times we think of this too late. We think of it, you know, when tomorrow is going to be that hot day. But I'll encourage the listeners to put your thinking caps on and talk innovation with one another, because there are grants out there for small flock owners who are interested in trying out a new idea. So one of the big workshops that I'm doing this year is teaching farmers how to write farmer grants for Northeast FAIR. FAIR is a good organization because they recognize some of the best ideas come from you guys, the farmers. And so sometimes you can get a little bit of grant money to try out a new idea to see if it works. You know, as long as you're willing to share your idea with the rest of the world. You don't get to keep the information for yourself. Sorry. No, it doesn't work that way. But
and is that name, are those the SARE grants?
SARE is an organization that is nationwide here in the United States. It's broken up into four different areas. There's Western SARE, which is, you know, say the Rockies out west, including the Pacific Islands and Pacific Island territories. Then there's North Central SARE, there's Southern SARE, and then there's Northeast SARE. And Pat, you and I are in two different SARE regions. I'm in Northeastern SARE, and you're in Southern SARE.
I am. And I don't even have an accent. I'm in the Southern SARE.
And so, depending on what region you're in, farmer grants, you know, their due dates vary by region, but I'm having a workshop on August 13th here in Delaware to teach farmers how to write farmer grants, because unfortunately here in Delaware and Maryland, hardly anyone's applying. Everyone's intimidated by SARE farmer grants, and I'm telling them, no, you don't need to be intimidated. You may not get it the first time, but they want you to apply again. Absolutely. You know, make the changes and give it another shot. It's only 7 questions.
Listen, Dr. McCray, we've got 2 minutes left, and there's one question that is probably more than a one-minute answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. It says, due to the heat, that she had an internal layer. She lost to the heat an internal layer that had a very large liver with dark spots on one lobe and a white raised lump about the size of a pencil eraser. There goes my S's. Any ideas as to what that is?
No. You'd have to go to a diagnostic lab. When you get into that liver problem, you need a pathologist to give you that
answer. Okay, great. Well, that about wraps it up for today's show then. Gosh, Professor McCray, thank you so much for coming on. Our special guest has been Dr.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
And I hope you feel better getting rid of those sniffles. So
when you go to the fair and you're around kids, you know, it's like they all the germs come to me.
Yeah, especially with the heat stress, they can sneak in there. So thank you for coming on and answering so many questions. Jesse Paul has been our special co-host. Thank you, Jesse, for coming in and, of course, adding your own very special sense of humor and twist to a lot
thank
of
you, Jesse,
to a lot
for
of
your
story.
Great suggestions, too.
Thank you. You're welcome.
The show was brought to us by blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, the chat, and the video services. We really love our chat room chicken ears. My goodness, you've been so active today. Thank you for calling in and for dialing in and for being on the chat room. And Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is the creator and the driving force of this show. He will be back after browning and vacationing on the beach for the next couple of weeks. I'm Pat Foreman, and on behalf of us all, we love you poultry pioneers so much, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody. Jeremy, it's Pat Foreman here. I'm just confirming that you'll be here around 2:30-ish is what I have in my calendar for pre-printing, so looking forward to having you come over. Thank you so much.
stress cell.
There is major support at 12.
fly.
I got one little